Posted prominently on the website of the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire is the school's vision for equity, diversity, and inclusion. And that goes, the university has made it a central priority of the campus to increase recruitment and retention of students and faculty of color and from other marginalized groups. But that vision was tarnished in the past week by a series of social media posts by members of the UW-Eau Claire football team. Posts that included racially charged language and images directed at the school's student organization, Black Male Empowerment. Those posts drew national attention and responses from the university's students, faculty, and administration. This hour on the West Side, we examine racial tensions on campus at UW-Eau Claire. Good morning. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and pleased to be joined here in the studio today by James Schmidt, the Chancellor of UW-Eau Claire. Chancellor Schmidt, thank you for being with us.
Good to be here.
And also Wisconsin Public Radio colleague Liz Domes, our Eau Claire-based digital journalist who's been covering the story. Liz, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Dean.
We'll be joined later by Louis Balaam, who is the president of Black Male Empowerment, also known as BME, and by Salika Duxworth-Lawton, a UW-Eau Claire history professor whose specialties include civil rights. Also later in the show, we'll open up the phone lines to get your thoughts, comments, or questions at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. So let's open this morning by taking us through the events of last week that we're talking about. And Liz Domes, you've been following the story for WPR News. How did this story come to be?
Sure, Dean. So on Tuesday, there was a social media post that really started to gain traction. That post was a screenshot of a conversation on Snapchat, a private conversation allegedly between members of the UW-Eau Claire football team. Those conversations and those posts had, racially charged messages and rhetoric. In one of the posts, one of the users said, and I'm paraphrasing a bit here, if you're unable to make the BME meeting, the WME is meeting at 7 p.m. tonight. So we understand that BME stands for Black Male Empowerment. That's a legitimate organization on campus that really strives to create a bond and a brotherhood between its members and to really change the narrative of Black men on campuses. And so the inference then is that WME stands for White Male Empowerment, which is not an organization that exists. But the reason why that's inferred is because that post was paired with an image of a burning cross and Klansmen in the background.
Right. And there was further aspects of that conversation that made this an inflammatory topic as well. Obviously, the photograph is the visual cue. But, what are the things were said there that make this so inflammatory?
Absolutely. So, you're right. There were, a few responses to that initial post with the burning cross and Klansmen. In one instance, someone identified another participant in the Snapchat conversation as the Grand Wizard, which is understood as the title given to the national KKK leader.
Right.
Someone else had said, I'm quoting, and this may be a bit disturbing to listeners. Someone said, "I'll be there. I'll be 5 minutes late. Think the cross will still be burning. Don't want to miss that again." And then someone else said, "Yeah, we don't do it till 10 minutes in. That pic is from last week's meeting." And then someone else responded, "I don't know why you guys are wasting wood burning a cross, though." And then someone else said, "Honestly, just find someone who doesn't have the same views as you or looks a bit different and burn them." And then someone else said, "Do you have spare gasoline?"
So obviously, I said inflammatory, and it takes on both a literal and a figurative sense in that case. You pointed out, Liz, that this was a private chat. So this wasn't like something that was posted openly on a site. Doesn't make it better or worse, but the intention there is obviously different. Do you get a sense of how this was acquired or how this came to be that it became public?
Yes. So someone had became aware that this conversation existed, then the images that were taken, the screenshots that were taken, were shown to members of the executive board of the BME. And then a member on that board, Jalen Thomas, felt very, very strongly about what was being said and felt that, you know, the public should be aware that these conversations were being had among members of, you know, the university's, one of the university's athletic teams.
You spent some time talking to individuals on campus. What sort of response have you observed over this incident?
People are enraged. I think, you know, some are calling for expulsion of these students. Some are saying, you know, a suspension might be enough. But people, you know, are really horrified by the events that took place, and they have reached out to administration, including Chancellor Jim, through emails, you know, in-person conversations, social media posts. People feel very strongly about what had happened.
We're talking about the Snapchat conversation that was revealed last week among some members of the UW-Eau Claire football team that aimed racially charged comments at the group BME, Black Male Empowerment. Louis Balaam, the president of that organization, is on his way and should be joining us shortly. But in the meantime, let's turn to Chancellor Jim Schmidt. So, Chancellor, you did issue a response to the revelation of that racially charged exchange. Can you summarize for us what it is, what the university's official response to this is?
Well, we first became aware of this late Tuesday afternoon. It was really just took all the oxygen out of the room. I was absolutely horrified. I can think of no other image that could be posted that would not only bring, you know, terrify large segments of the university population, but disgust everyone else on that campus.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I became aware of it, we immediately began the process to hold students who've posted these images and made comments accountable. The athletic department has as a course of doing business, if any athlete is accused of doing something that significantly breaks the code not only of the university but of those teams, they're immediately suspended pending the investigation. It's not that's not the penalty. It's just saying, look, until this has been resolved, you no longer put on a blue-gold uniform and represent the institution. That's why football players, all athletes, are held to a higher standard because they do pull those jerseys on. We immediately began the investigation. This investigation is different than the anonymous post that was made earlier this year on a student's dormitory door. Society has been changing and trying to become more inclusive, which is one of the reasons why so many racist incidences are anonymous. And they're a bit confounding because it's really hard to track them down. This one is different because of the medium that it was on. It's my understanding that it's a relatively small group of people within that Snapchat group, 30 to 40 players, because it's based on classes. But as it saw the light of day by being posted in public, and I encourage that, by the way. You know, I've had people ask me, now this is the second racist incident in 1 year. I'm like, that's wrong. There are hundreds of incidents that happen every day. Speak to almost any person of color. People who have different sexual orientations, it's other underrepresented groups, and they meet bigotry, racism, homophobia many times a day. We are a reflection of society, and this will continue until society has changed. We hope to be a better reflection of society. The dean of students immediately began his investigation, which includes talking to the young men who were listed in the social media post. Dean of Students is reaching out to other members of the university community that have information to share about it. And he expects to complete his investigation this week. He wants to make sure he's had plenty of time to meet with the members of the BME group on campus. And he has stated that not only will he complete the investigation, but he will have met with the students who have been accused, and appropriate sanctions will be placed on them before Thanksgiving.
Thank you. That's the voice of Chancellor Jim Schmidt. We're joined now in the studio by Louis Balaam.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. And your organization, Black Male Empowerment, also known as BME, was mentioned in that Snapchat exchange. What's been the response of your membership?
My members have been very professional handling it. I think everyone is getting all construed in what the purpose of why we're doing this. My members are not doing this for sanctions or consequences or punishments. My members are, we're taking it further step because, for one, we're fed up with the incidents keep happening, and two, we want to see long-term work be done in the institution. It starts with the institution, it starts with the administration, it starts with the staff and faculty that you're hiring. We're going to continue to fight because we want to see progress long after we're gone, 3, 4, 5 years later down the line. So the next generation of minority students that come here and they're thinking about whether or not they want to come to Eau Claire, they're going to see, oh, this situation happened, but this happened for that. So we can't do that anymore. That's not tolerated at all. Not just, oh, they just suspended them. They'll be back next semester. Then it's going to be room for work in that. So my members, we just want long-term justice. That's institutional-wise.
You mentioned, and Chancellor also mentioned this, that this isn't a single incident, mm-hmm. but it's the most visible of a number of incidents. Can you give me an example of other things that have happened with you or with people that you know that would be considered mm-hmm. racist?
Like I said, my 3 years attending this university, this is the first time where it's been so broad and so direct and so without hesitation, so to say. But like I've experienced like subliminal racism. Like it wouldn't be like just direct or verbatim racism. It'd be like the way they looked at me, eye contact. But when they see me walking down the street, they would cross the street, or they wouldn't walk past me, or when I speak, they wouldn't fully speak back to me how I speak. So it'd be more subliminal racism. It wouldn't be like just direct. This is the first time where I feel like they were brave enough to do it and say names and stuff like that. So, yeah, this is the first time it's been this huge.
I want to point out I have invited the individuals who authored the social media post to share their point of view and explain their actions. They have not yet responded to that. Some might look at those Snapchat mm-hmm. post and brush it off as, hey, their kid's being stupid. But in his statement this week, the chancellor mentioned that some members of the campus community are scared. Have you or other members of BME felt fear based on this?
No. I don't know if it's because of where we come from or what, but like there's not even an urge of fear in our heart. We're more so just worried, not scared, but we're worried for the future. You know, the safety of the students to come after us, because as members of BME, we're pretty old. We have a couple young members, but after we leave, it's going to be a whole new platoon. You know what I'm saying? So we're trying to secure that foundation on this campus so that this won't ever happen again.
You're welcome to join our conversation about racial tensions at UW-Eau Claire at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Louis Balaam, before we continue, I'd like to spend some time talking about BME. It's an officially sanctioned student organization. What's the goal of the organization?
It's not an officially sanctioned student organization.
Oh, okay.
We're in the process of doing that right now.
Okay,
so
thank you for the correction.
It's okay. So right now, where we at right now, we just submitted the Constitution and it got approved. So therefore, it means that we are a student organization, but we have to go through a probationary period where we're watched over for like 6 months to a year to where they can officially name us one. But like we get some of the perks of being a student org now.
So what's the goal?
The goal of BME?
Yeah.
The goal of BME is to bring men of distinction together to form a brotherhood that cannot be broken, put a positive imprint on the world, and bring Black Male Empowerment to UW-Eau Claire.
Why is it important to have an organization like Black Male Empowerment?
Solidity, presence, and just for opportunities at a campus and in an environment that us Black men are not used to. Black Male Empowerment, it is a professional development organization, so that's strictly what we focus on. It's not for profit. So what we're doing is we figured that, hey, we're in a majority publicized Caucasian area, let's try to apply ourselves and step into their world and show them that we can perform in their world just as well as ours. We can dress up every day. We can speak proper. We can go to class. We can get good grades. We can have internships. We can do good work. So we just wanted to make our presence known on this campus that we're well-rounded individuals as well.
That's the voice of Louis Balaam. He's the president of Black Male Empowerment. We're also joined this hour by Chancellor Jim Schmidt of UW-Eau Claire. Liz Domes has been with us as well, and she is a WPR reporter a digital reporter based in our Eau Claire office. Coming up, we will hear from faculty member Salika Duxworth-Lawton right after this break. So, what do you think? Are you someone who is familiar with this situation and want to make a comment on it? 800-228-5615 is the number for you to call. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is The West Side on the Ideas Network. So our topic today on The West Side is racial tension at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. After a Snapchat conversation among blue-gold football players came to light last week that included racially charged comments and a photo of a burning cross and Ku Klux Klan members. We're joined by Louis Balaam, the president of the UWEC student organization Black Male Empowerment, Chancellor Jim Schmidt, and Liz Domes, WPR's digital journalist who's been following the story. And we're now joined by Salika Duxworth-Lawton. She's a professor of history at UW-Eau Claire. Salika Duxworth-Lawton, thank you for joining us.
Hello, how are you? Thank you for having me here.
You bet. So you are an African-American member of the UW-Eau Claire faculty. I'd like to hear your response to this incident and the response by the administration.
Faculty, many of our multicultural faculty, I can't speak for all of them, but many of them were highly disappointed. We were not included in any of the discussions. We were not included in any support structure. We are expected to just roll with this without any help from the Dean of Students' office. And while Chancellor Jim has been very good about reaching out to us and talking to us, some of the support structures underneath him are not. I have a lot of faith in him to fix this. But the faculty of color and the faculty overall are taking the lead. And we submitted a petition on Friday to have an all-faculty meeting on Tuesday. You know, we understand that this problem is not just in Eau Claire. This is a national problem. Universities across the nation, including Syracuse University, are seeing racial incidents. Faculty of color have to handle this in our classrooms, and we need support and training to be able to do that. We need our white colleagues to not minimize it, and I've seen a lot of minimizing over the last week.
Can you describe how that plays out? I mean, describe that minimizing situation.
There are people who are trying to play this off as just a joke. There are people who are arguing that this was an overreaction. The specific comment about burning people is a threat. It's a pretty serious threat, and the university is actually being very nice by not pressing charges, because police officers who have things said like that to them on a regular basis would have pressed a felony intimidation or harassment charge. And I know a number of people who are both DAs and public defenders who have told me that. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the university is being restrained, but I approve of that. I want them to be restrained. I want this to be an educational situation for the individuals involved. But I think that a number of whites in our community and also among our faculty need to understand the difference between a threat and an insult, what protected speech is versus unprotected speech is. And we need to start a conversation that is very explicit about the line and why threats will not be tolerated. This was a threat. This was an absolute and total threat to the BME young men, and to be honest, to every black person who is on this campus.
I understand that the meeting has been set with the chancellor by the faculty. What are you hoping for from that meeting?
We want to amend the faculty and academic handbook to make it easier for faculty to access UWS 18 sub 11. This is the area of the Wisconsin legislative laws that governs misbehavior in public and in the classroom. People who intimidate, people who harass, people who use technology to harass.
Salika,
we also want to amend the FASRIP to involve notification protocols for faculty when these things are going on.
Salika, you mentioned that, you know, you would like there to be an education happening, you know, as a result of this incident. Do you see that happening as, you know, discussing free speech in the classroom, or do you think that it extends beyond that? And if it does extend beyond that, what does that education look like?
It does extend beyond that. I mean, this has to be a community conversation. Clearly our community, and these children are coming from our community. I shouldn't say children. These are men. Although people who act like that and cover it with just a joke, I should say, have not earned the title of men. The BME men are the ones who are standing in discipline and power to protect the entire black community. We need to have this conversation with faculty, because most people are conflating free speech with threats, and they think threats are covered by free speech. The First Amendment does not cover threats. And some of them, because of their cultural heritage, do not recognize historic threats. So we need to explain to them the context of a threat. The U.S. Supreme Court has made it harder for people who are threatened to access federal law. But state law discusses true threats. And I think that education through our orientation system, through our faculty Center for Excellence in Teaching and Learning, through probably mandatory training that needs to be in person. There's a number of venues we're thinking about. We're thinking about an Uniting Bridges, which I'm the president of in the community, wants to work with our activists to have an all-community read where for 2020, every month out of the year, starting in February, we're reading a book about a marginalized person, about a marginalized group, so we can understand better how to work together and be one Eau Claire. But it starts with the understanding that threats cannot be tolerated. If you allow threats, threats become violence. That is the lesson of the civil rights movement. That's the lesson of history. You have to stop the threats.
That's the voice of Salika Duxworth-Lawton, faculty member at UW-Eau Claire. We're talking about racial tensions at UW-Eau Claire, particularly stemming from Snapchat posts that were made by UW-Eau Claire football players that included a photo of a burning cross and Ku Klux Klansman and other racially charged language. Chancellor Smith, you've heard what Salika Duxworth-Lawton had to say, and you've taken some criticism from faculty and staff regarding the communication here, particularly how long it took for faculty to get the official information. Did the administration drop the ball there, or what caused that delay?
We absolutely could have done better. We should have reached out in the ways that Salika has mentioned. This weekend, our Dean of Students and Provost spent a good part of the weekend going back through all of our processes, mapping out where we need to insert the appropriate kind of communication, just like Salika has mentioned. We want to have that conversation with the faculty and staff of color. It's going to be an opportunity for other people to suggest how we can do better. We need to do better as a university on all of these issues. We've made this issue of how do we create a more safe, welcoming environment for all people as a bedrock of what we stand for as an institution. It's one of our top two issues that we have been specifically focused on. It is impossible for the university to meet its mission unless we do this work well. Mm-hmm. This has been this is not a new issue, but when I stepped into the shoes of the chancellor, I became head of the institution. And even though I'm a straight white guy, I've had to try to learn. Mm-hmm. I have not had their experiences. I can try to imagine and empathize what it means to be in Lewis's shoes or any number of other people's shoes, but we will never fully appreciate it. So the positions I've taken have been through over the last 6 years, listening carefully, mm-hmm. keeping my mouth shut, listening to our faculty, Light Salika. We need to do better as an institution. I believe this most recent incident will be an opportunity to coalesce support across the campus, to bring awareness to the entire campus, mm-hmm. for us to take another big step forward. In the last 5 years, this institution has put a number of important measures in place, and we welcome a brand new Vice Chancellor for Equity, Diversity, Inclusion, and Student Affairs to our campus on December 16th, and Dr. Anderson knows his first priority is to kick off this community-wide conversation to develop an action plan for those next steps. Mm-hmm. To be clear, we're not waiting for him. We are prepared to take action now.
And I just wanted to touch up on the whole investigation thing, consequence thing. For those who are out there listening, the dean of students of EDI has been very, very, very assertive and doing his due diligence in making sure that this issue gets resolved properly. I'm hearing a lot of people out there in the community and people that in third parties saying that, why is it taking so long? Or it's been 4 days. But the thing is, they don't understand the investigation. Majority of people on this campus never even been under an investigation before in their life. So they doesn't know that in order to have a complete, thorough investigation, that it takes time. It's a time process because you want to gather as much data, information as possible so that you can make the most accurate decision. So I just want the people out there watching, just have some patience. They're not working. The Dean of Students Office is doing a tremendous job. I talk to them every day, at least. So I just want to get that out there that they're not just sitting around. They're not just sitting around waiting. So I appreciate that.
I just wanted to touch on something that Chancellor Jim just said, that, you know, there are a lot of us who can't possibly understand, mm-hmm. you know, what it's like to, mm-hmm. for example, be in your shoes, Lewis. So when somebody crosses the street when you're walking past, mm-hmm. or an incident like this happens, what happens in your psyche? What does that do to a person?
Well, if you're new to it, it's going to mess with your brain throughout the week. But me and a couple members of BME, we've been here for 3-4 years, so we're used to it. And we've been here so long that we've actually seen a change throughout interactions with us Black folks and those of non-color. We've seen interactions get better. We've seen them at their worst. So I can say that it's gotten a lot better since, like, 2014, 2015, for sure. It's still kind of sketchy, but that goes around with BME and having that presence on campus. Like, we have to be here to show the people on this campus our culture. They're not going to know it by any way. If the only way you're going to figure out how we really operate is if you spend time with us, hang out with us, talk to us. And when you see us, just speak to us. You never know. We might tell you something that'll change your life. You know what I'm saying? So It's just that iceberg. I think a lot of people on this campus, they listen to, like, the media and the movies and stuff a lot about color folks, and they just run with that. But if they're not educated, which they're acting like they're not already, if they're not educated, they know that the media is not going to portray us accurately anyway. So you're only going to know that through firsthand basis. And a lot of students on this campus kind of steer away from that. I don't know why yet, but that's the thing that we're hoping to change in the future is the operations and the interactions between students of color and students of non-color on this campus.
Salika, yes, I was going to ask you to, because you work not only on campus but within the community to try to bridge these sort of situations. Is it different within the community than on campus, or do you see a parallel there?
I think the community is behind the campus. We have to bring equity, diversity, and inclusion to the community. And the Uniting Bridges has gathered a number of activists together. We were already planning to do that. This has just forced our hand to be more intentional and early up. I mean, we want the city, we want the university, we want the county to work together. This is, you know, if we fix the campus and they go out into the community and it's still bad, there's a problem. But I will say that while the dean of students is there for students, faculty have nothing. Faculty of color have had nothing. We have been completely left out of the situation. And we are not sure that a vice chancellor of EDI will actually represent us because this person is not a faculty member. Mm. So what we need to do is to make sure that there is transparency in this process. And, you know, faculty under Act 10 lost some power, but we still have the ability to set through the Faculty and Academic Staff Handbook transparency measures and to start this process. Right now, what the faculty and the community need to do, and what the community needs to do, is to listen and to be prepared to confront their comfort in the mirror. It's easy to minimize, because if you minimize and say that those of us who are black or those of us who are marginalized, we're overreacting, they don't have to do anything. That's when they don't have to do anything.
Chancellor Schmidt, is there more that could be done for faculty of color on this campus?
No question. We have a lot of work to do in all these areas. We've taken this charge seriously. We have to do better. We've done a much better job in recruiting faculty of color to our campus. The most recent HR data suggests that over 20% of our faculty are members of an underrepresented, they're people of color. Some are international faculty of color as well. But we have to continue to do more. But that's the first step. For an institution of our size, with a little over 10% of the student body being students of color, more typically you'd see 5 or 6%. So what does that tell us? That tells us that our deans and our faculty committees, who are primarily responsible for hiring new faculty, have done a good job. Now, institutionally, we need to make sure there are measures in place so that we can retain them and support them to do the important work that we've not only asked them to do, but I think Salika and others would be the first to tell you, when issues come up, those are the people that our students of color then go to for support and advice. And that's a huge burden that is not recognized in their normal workload. We successfully changed the handbook that Salika was referring to. I think it was 3 years ago, Salika.
Yeah,
So now we specifically require and include the work on equity, diversity, and inclusion as a part of the regular evaluation of faculty and in the determination for promotion and tenure. To the best of my knowledge, we are the first university in the nation to take that step. Now we need to continue to breathe life into it, make sure we've got the training, and do the hard work of sitting down with all of our processes, like the one Salika pointed out. We need to work through to make sure our systems are aligned to support them.
We're talking about racial tensions at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. 800-228-5615 is the number to join the conversation. That's 800-228-5615. Had a couple of people who left messages. Lizzie from Eau Claire says she's a UW-Eau Claire student.
Yep,
many students.
Lizzie. Hey, Lizzie.
she actually dropped off, but many students support BME in suspending the offending students from the university. They need an education in, quote, being a decent human being, end quote, instead. And then Vern from Boyd also had some comments about how these are happening. And we also have Lynn from Eau Claire, and Lynn is actually on the line with us. Lynn, thanks for joining the West Side, and please share your comment.
Good morning, and this is extremely disturbing in that I believe that since I'm going to be 65, and I grew up in a suburb on the south side of Chicago, and not much has changed but the nicification of our prejudice. Nothing has changed, but we don't see the horrors, so we don't. We have been conditioned to believe they don't exist.
Can you define what you mean by nicification? I'm curious what that means.
With accepting, I'm not prejudiced, but accepting that everything is fine now because we don't see what's going on. We have been conditioned to turn a blind eye. Narcissism and bullying of others has become just normalized, and things will come to a head. This is not right. And we saw, you know, when I was a kid, you know, I was involved in race riots. What we saw on television with dogs and water cannons being aimed at our fellow citizenry, and we didn't see pictures, but we saw graphics of Bobby Seals being restrained in a courtroom, and it's not much different. Mm-hmm. That's nicification when we don't see it.
Lynn, thank you for your comments. Lewis, you're nodding. That's something that strikes with you?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. I was agreeing to both of you guys.
Yeah.
that's a really good point that she touched on. And I feel like that's why my members decided to bring this light to the issue, because, like I said in previous reports and stuff, like, this is not our first time experiencing that. And 99% of BME's members was or are on that football team. So that's something that we were used to, and it's bad that we were used to that, because we know we're the underdogs. We're underrepresented out here. We come seeing somebody, we thinking that nothing's going to happen, because we would try and we wouldn't see actions be taken how we would like them. So with us being on the team, like, yeah, we were used to it, and I feel like this was the first time that my group, my members, had hard proof and evidence to where if we came to somebody with an issue, we would have the follow-up and the documents to back this up, because it's always that now. You always need proof now for some reason. So I feel like my members thought that this was finally the first time we had to where we could bring this issue to the light and hope that it gets resolved.
We're overdue for a break, but mm-hmm. Salika Duxworth-Lawton, I know you have to leave us to go teach a class. Any response to Lynn's comments about nicification of racism?
Yeah, she's right. I mean, the idea that we can just declare that racism is over and the people who are complaining are just playing the race card, it's comfortable. It allows people who can be indifferent to be indifferent. It's a part of the fact that until recently, most racism was covert and was very hard to catch. But the people who have felt empowered by the rise of white nationalism, by the rise of authoritarianism in this country, also play on niceness and law and order. You know, when you protest this misbehavior, you're told you're being incivil. You're told that you are violating people's free speech. But free speech has never protected threats. And to protest threats is my right as an American citizen. So this nicification, this semantical games that people want to play, is what we have to attack now. And we have to name the derailing and name the threats and say, you're not allowed to threaten and intimidate us anymore. This is not Martin Luther King's civil rights movement anymore. It's civil rights 2.0. We are citizens. We born and naturalized here. And as a black person, my family and my ancestors have fought for and made this country. These are our rights. All we want is that they are enforced. We're not asking for anything more than anybody else has. We only want what everyone else has.
Salika Duxworth-Lawton, thank you for joining us. I know you have to drop off. Glad to have you with us. Salika Duxworth-Lawton is professor of history at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, also a member of the executive board of the Chippewa Valley chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union, and vice president of the Uniting Bridges organization. She drops off to go on to class. We keep the conversation going with our remaining guests. Lewis Balaam, he's president of the UW-Eau Claire student organization Black Male Empowerment, also known as BME. James Schmidt, the chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, and Liz Domes, WPR's digital journalist who's been following this story. There is still time for you to join us by phone, but you'd want to get in pretty soon now. How do we deal with issues of diversity equity and inclusion here in Western Wisconsin, not only on the university campus, but throughout the region. 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbeck on the West Side. This is the Ideas Network. Our conversation this morning on the West Side is about racial tension at UW-Eau Claire, sparked by some chats, Snapchat conversations that were intended to be private, but ended up being publicized and included racially charged photographs, racially charged language, and has drawn a response from the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire administration and faculty and students. And let's turn back to Chancellor Jim Schmidt. Chancellor, this incident is obviously an embarrassment to a school that just announced an initiative to grow its recruitment efforts. In your statement last week, you described it as a dark time for the university. Does the action of a few individuals really have that kind of impact?
I think it does have an impact. I think it's important. I would tell you, though, even though I'm embarrassed by the action that the students take and horrified, we have actually put a bigger magnifying glass on it. We do not sweep these incidents under the rug. I would not have made myself available to the media outlets from around the country. I've spoken forcefully on it. I think it's important that people who are charged with leading institutions like this, leading communities, people in leadership roles need not to run away from it, but look at it square on, share it, and to be very transparent. I believe we need to share everything possible about this, because unless you put a light on it, unless you share it, it's hard to bring people together to how you solve it. One person can't eliminate racism from a campus. It's going to take everyone, and we will continue to have it as long as it exists in society. But we need all of our faculty, all of our students and staff, we need our community members to look it square in the eye, in the eyes of one of your callers. Otherwise, it's nicified, and people don't realize that it exists. So we are not sweeping these things under the rug. In this instance, we will have educational opportunities because the students' names are attached to the messages, and it allows us to do something. We've had people criticize that earlier incident where there was anonymous posting that nothing was done. Well, the investigation remains open. We have anonymous tip lines on our website so people can still bring information forward. But it's frustrating when it's anonymous. It tells us that it is not accepted by society. But because it's anonymous, these are cowards that make these statements and run. In this instance, we know the people who are involved.
Liz, you referred earlier to that earlier incident. Can you describe that in a minute or so?
Sure. So there was a Native American student who saw on her dorm room door a reference to, I believe it said, go back to the res, and then used a slur. And, you know, the university, again, in that case, had the dean's office looking into investigating it. And then we're working with the university campus police to try and, you know, get tips and figure out. But at this time, they don't have a prime suspect in that. So as Chancellor Jim noted, you know, they're still taking tips, still trying to figure out, you know, who's at fault for that.
Stepping back to the incident from that was revealed last week, it seems odd that this sort of open racism would come from members of the Blue Gold football team. That's an organization where teamwork is required in order to be successful, and I suppose that's true in just about anything, but it's very overtly talked about. The players involved have been suspended, but is the athletic department planning any other steps?
Yes, there was an emergency team meeting Wednesday following the event where the athletic director and coach explained why these actions are not acceptable. In a conversation, many conversations with both the AD and a conversation with the coach, they want to drive all racism and conversations out of those teams. The comment was made, I'd rather have a losing team than a racist team. So it is more important how we do things, how we do them together. Moving forward, I've directed that none of the teams are allowed to have these private chat groups that do not also have members of the coaching staff and athletic staff as a part of it. I think, frankly, just knowing that there are people who are monitoring the conversations will elevate the conversation. Open racism or subtle racism, as Lewis mentioned earlier, we must be leaders. And our athletic teams generally have been outstanding, and we will look further into this to make sure that they represent the institution as they pull on that jersey.
Now, Louis Balaam, you mentioned earlier that a number of the men in BME have had a connection with the football team. I believe you yourself are a former member of the team. Is that right? What caused you to leave the team?
I didn't leave. I got kicked off the team.
Okay.
This year, my senior year. If you ask, if you go to Wesley and you ask him, he's going to tell you that I was missing things and I was late. But that's false. I was at this university for 3 years. He was here for 3 months. I didn't miss anything. It's my senior year. I know what I have to do in order to stay on the team. And when he called me in his office and told me why he kicked me off the team, he said that you're a distraction. And it was, and that I never heard anything else from him after that. And that was this year.
So, you know, is this as much training as we're talking about for the students? Is this a coaching problem as well?
Of course, absolutely, all the way to a T. Because you're the head honcho. You know what I'm saying? This is your team. You need to know what goes on with your team on and off the field at all times. This hasn't happened with previous other coaches under their behalf. So this makes me wonder, what's happening? Is the players bringing you this and you're just throwing it off? Are you relate to the players that well that they don't feel comfortable bringing you these situations? Because there was multiple players in that chat, and a player who was in that chat told us. So why wouldn't he come tell you? So what's the relationship going on with the coaches here? Like, is it not sturdy? Is it not for real? Or does he just not care? So it absolutely, automatically, for sure, is down to the coaching staff, because I feel like they should have a better hand of what's going on. The players should have some type of fear or some type of something in the back of their mind, knowing that, pardon my French, but coach don't play that. They should have, and to jokingly throw his name in the conversation in that group, in that Snapchat during the incident that you're talking about, to even have his name in it.
Should point that out, because I think that we haven't mentioned that. The last entry on that is Ask Coach B. Yeah. And obviously the coach isn't here to defend himself, but I'm curious, I'm sure you've been in touch with the other African-American players on the team. You know, what's their response to this, and is it something that surprises them?
So out of like 60, 70-man roster, it's probably only like four black kids. Me getting kicked off the team, it made it three. But their reaction is just as ours. They're not happy. They don't like it. And I just, there's a black guy, and there's one black guy left on the team, and I just feel like he's all by himself in this, because there's no one else, like we all done now. And I just want him to know that we stand behind him, and if this situation ever happens again, he know that we'll be there to help him.
Obviously, still work to do. UW-Eau Claire Student Senate is meeting tonight to consider a resolution relating to the incident of the racist Snapchat postings involving the male students, five male students at UW-Eau Claire. The student body president, Charlie Johnson, just sent us a copy of that resolution. Liz Domes, you've read it over, and we're down to about a minute left here. Can you talk about what the Senate's going to be considering tonight?
Sure. So in this resolution, the student senate uses words such as intimidation, acts of hatred, dehumanization to talk about this incident and identify it. And then it goes on to say that the student senate is urging that administration not follow the trends of other universities who, according to this resolution, they say have failed to hold students accountable for bias incidents. There's another, you know, resolution in this that says, or another part of this that says, in order to preserve the safety of students at UW-Eau Claire, the Student Senate implores its administration to find a penalty following the investigation.
Thank you, Liz Domes. And that's how we'll have to end it. We'll continue to watch the story, of course, at Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to Catherine Thomas for producing this show and to Kate Spranger for publicity. Next week, we look at Native American Heritage Month. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Thanks for joining us. Have a good week and a great Thanksgiving. You've been listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.